Hello and welcome to the BS History Podcast. My name is BS Dreyer, and today I wanted to talk a little bit about Taiwan. Taiwan is a small island nation off the coast of mainland China, and in the past couple of weeks it's become kind of a hot topic in the world press. This small island nation with 23 million inhabitants in an area smaller than Denmark, about the size of Belgium, has, you know, done better than basically any other country against the coronavirus. At the present moment, Taiwan has 432 cases of coronavirus registered and 6 deaths. All in all, an impressive feat for such a small nation with so many inhabitants living quite close to each other and quite close to China. Many Taiwanese do live and work and study and travel in China, so it is kind of remarkable how they've been able to manage this crisis. Furthermore, in just this week, you can in multiple media outlets read and hear and see for yourself that the Taiwanese government actually already New Year's Day in 2019 warned the WHO, the World Health Organization, about a new unknown virus in China. But because of China's persistent opposition towards any recognition of Taiwan's de facto political independence, the WHO basically ignored the warnings. It was only when China itself, mainland China, admitted that the virus was spreading amongst people that the organization called a meeting and began to warn other countries about this new virus. And in the coming time, you will undoubtedly hear more about the Taiwanese success against the coronavirus. But what kind of country is Taiwan? Why is China so opposed to recognizing their political independence? To answer those questions, you do have to go quite far back in history. Now, Taiwan's Aboriginal population is in fact an Austronesian-speaking people. It is uncertain whether the first people wandered to Taiwan over a land bridge from the Chinese mainland, or whether they arrived, sailing from the various islands and areas in Southeast Asia. But since prehistoric times, the population of the island has basically been a mix of these Aboriginal peoples who speak an Austronesian language and Chinese and Japanese pirates, because the whole area around Taiwan has always seen a lot of traffic in terms of just ships passing by. And that has made it a hotbed for piracy throughout pretty much all of recorded history. That actually changed somewhat during the 1700s. The Qing or Qing dynasty had conquered the Ming dynasty on the Chinese mainland. And a group of Ming loyalists had fled to Taiwan, and the Qing had pursued them to the island in order to exterminate that threat to the new Qing hegemony in China. And after a naval battle in 1683, the Ming loyalists were defeated, and the island of Taiwan, for the first time in history, became formally Chinese territory. Throughout the next couple of centuries, China attempted to secure control over the island. China wanted to prevent piracy and civilize the Aboriginal populations of the island. And in the coastal areas, they were by and large successful in sinicizing the population, and Chinese language and culture came to dominate. In the much harder to reach mountainous areas in the middle of the island, the Aboriginal peoples kept most of their autonomy. Taiwan had become a Chinese province. However, the location of the island made control from mainland China a difficult feat to master, and Taiwan was plagued by different conflicts. At the time, there was an aphorism: every third year an uprising, every fifth year a rebellion, and that sort of very fittingly describes the political situation on the island during the Chinese rule. It was a hotbed for people dissatisfied with the reigning dynasty in Imperial China, and it was continuously a hotbed for piracy throughout the South China Sea. And then in 1895, the Qing Dynasty lost a war with the up-and-coming Japanese Empire. Taiwan was transferred to the Japanese victors, and under the Japanese colonial rule, conditions for the Taiwanese didn't really improve much at all. Between exploitation and heavy-handed assimilation programs, there was a very strong opposition born towards Japan, and multiple more rebellion attempts and uprisings all the way until 1945, when Japan was decisively defeated by the United States of America during the Pacific War. And then in 1949, Taiwan became a very important part of the Chinese Civil War, a civil war that had been ongoing pretty much since the fall of the Imperial dynasty in China. In 1949, the communists had overrun Nanjing, which was then the capital of the nationalist Kuomintang Chinese Republic, led by Chiang Kai-shek, and Taiwan became a refuge for the Chinese nationalists, who proclaimed Taipei, the main city on Taiwan, the sort of temporary de facto capital for the Republic of China. This temporary status became permanent, as the communists, under the leadership of Mao Zedong, had control of the Chinese mainland. As a result, since 1949, there was basically two Chinese countries, two Chinas, if you will. There you had the Chinese People's Republic, which was mainland China, ruled from Beijing under the leadership of Mao Zedong and his Communist Party. And then you had the Republic of China on Taiwan, and both were claiming to be the legitimate governments for the entire Chinese people. On Taiwan, although they called themselves a republic, in fact, Chiang Kai-shek's nationalists, the Kuomintang, were very much in power, and they remained very much in power, because the country was basically a military dictatorship where any and all pro-communists or anti-nationalist factions or movements were repressed quite heavy-handedly. But as a wave of pro-democracy protests and movement had come into action in the 80s, around the same time as South Korea was democratizing, the country of Taiwan, you know, began in 1987 a pretty expansive and extensive democratization process. And the government in the country today, in Taiwan today, very much looks like the other East Asian democracies. Since 1949, the United States of America has basically been the guarantor of Taiwanese security and independence from the Chinese mainland. But the island itself also has significant military capabilities, with about 300,000 active military personnel and almost 4 million in reserve. A war with the communists on the mainland would probably still be lost by the island, but it's very obvious that the Taiwanese are willing to fight for their continued independent status. And if you want to understand Taiwan today, you do have to look at the history of the island. The Chinese Communist Party pretty much claims that Taiwan is basically nothing but a Chinese sort of breakout province that should be reunited with the mainland. And Taiwan itself has gone from under Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalists wanting to reconquer the mainland to just really wanting to protect its status as an independent and democratic country. And as long as the country of Taiwan has the United States of America in the back, they will probably be able to do so. But this time around, the Chinese pressure to keep Taiwan out of the international community as far as possible actually had some pretty dire consequences. If the WHO had not been ignoring the warning from the Taiwanese government, it's possible that quite a few human lives could have been saved. China at this point continues to use its economic power to prevent other nations or discourage other nations from, you know, close cooperation and recognition of Taiwan. But with the present crisis, the faith in the mainland Chinese Communist government is at an all-time low. Well, perhaps not all-time, but certainly within the past 30 years or so, it's a low point. And the world economy's dependence of China has been very much, you know, sort of apparent now as a problem. And it's possible, although not certain, that there is now a political will from many different world governments to stem Chinese influence. And for Taiwan, this is a pretty good opportunity. Just this past autumn, China actually was able to convince a few Pacific Island nations to move their embassies from Taipei to Beijing, and Taiwan basically has now no diplomatic connections to any other countries that are official. And Taiwan has, since 1972, when Nixon made overtures towards the communist government in China, gradually lost all official diplomatic connections to any other countries on earth that matter, basically. But now, really, all countries across the globe should probably rethink their relationship with Taiwan. It's not as though Taiwan anymore poses any threat in actual fact to the Chinese government on the mainland. You know, in fact, today, most of the Taiwanese population, particularly the younger generation, views themselves as Taiwanese first and foremost, and not as Chinese. At this point, the opposition from the mainland communist China towards the Taiwanese democratic island China is probably more that it is a democratic problem for them, because it very clearly shows that you can absolutely have a Chinese population ruled effectively by a democracy. There are many more very, very fascinating facets of Taiwanese history that I have not gone into detail with today, but suffice it to say that Taiwan isn't China, and I hope it remains so, and I hope you learned a little bit, as now you will undoubtedly in the coming weeks hear more about Taiwan and its amazing, you know, response to the coronavirus. And I hope that little bit of background will give you a little bit more insight into all those stories that will be coming out about Taiwan. As always, I hope today's episode has been more history than BS, and thank you for listening.